101 WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's Friday, December 16th. On this episode of Redux, we take a look at the overall health of Jacksonville, literally. From the mental health of our young people to the concerns of policymakers in the face of a new administration. We also have a report from an investigation on one of Jacksonville's largest mental health facilities and much, much more. But first, some news. Here's an update to a story that aired on last week's podcast. Leaders in Jacksonville's African-American community are reacting to racially insensitive emails that were circulated among JEA employees. As WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, the emails came to light at the same time the public utility is being federally investigated for alleged racial discrimination in hiring.
It's been more than a month since WJCT first reported five JEA employees have filed racial discrimination complaints with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. As part of our investigation, racially insensitive email chains have surfaced. They were shared among other JEA employees, and JEA says they violate non-discrimination policies. Community activist Ben Frazier says he's not surprised.
There are those of us, the old-timers, people who were born and raised in this town, who've long known the story of nepotism and cronyism in hiring at JEA.
Frazier says he's planning to organize and voice displeasure at City Hall. Jacksonville NAACP President Isaiah Rumlin calls the complaints and emails very disturbing.
From talking with members of the group that I've met with in the past, I don't know whether they was aware of these emails or not, but just based on the fact, as it relates to what they have told me and the information that has been given to us, it appears that JEA have a serious problem as it relates to race.
Rumlin, recently appointed as chair of the Jacksonville Transit Authority Board, says employees came to him months before making their complaints public. He says he's still deciding how to proceed. Jacksonville City Councilman Garrett Dennis, who represents some of the employees, says the men also approached him.
If I want to go out there and be an advocate and help change the culture, you know, I want to go with facts. You know, I don't want to go with emotions or perceptions, but facts.
Dennis says he's been meeting with JEA officials monthly since May, though a JEA spokeswoman says they've met just twice. The complainants say they went to the press because they felt Rumlin and Dennis were dragging their feet. And another black leader is remaining silent on the investigation altogether. First Timothy Baptist Church pastor Fred Newbill is being considered for a seat on JEA's board. This summer, he demanded the resignation of Circuit Judge Mark Halsey for allegedly making racist remarks. Calls and emails to the pastor have gone unanswered. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
To start off our special podcast on the state of health in Jacksonville, three prominent lawmakers have called for an investigation into America's largest psychiatric chain, Universal Health Services. This comes after a BuzzFeed News investigation found that at least 10 UHS hospitals locked in people who were not in danger to themselves or others and held them until their insurance ran out. Employees of the hospital chain told BuzzFeed they were under pressure to fill beds by methods that included exaggerating people's symptoms and distorting their words to make them sound suicidal. One of these facilities is Riverpoint, a UHS psychiatric hospital located here in Jacksonville. Reporter Rosalyn Adams of BuzzFeed joined host Melissa Ross by phone earlier this week on First Coast Connect.
At Riverpoint, for a while, they had a lot of older patients, geriatric patients, who were, you know, being funded by Medicare. And Medicare especially, there's not the same sort of oversight and review process that commercial insurance companies have. So if you are admitted to a psychiatric hospital on Medicare, the government will pay for a 10-day stay at a certain flat rate, and then after 10 days, that payment starts to go down slightly. So a lot of it seemed to be aimed at those Medicare patients because it's very easy to keep those patients because there's not that review process. And then in the course of a public records request, I had requested complaints about the hospital from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. There was a document that said the central office had requested the state to look in to inspect the hospital precisely for all of the things that employees were saying, that they were keeping everybody for 10 days, that it was all about maximizing insurance payments, that they were misusing Florida's involuntary commitment law in order to do this. And so that gave us further confirmation of what was happening at River Point.
U.S. Senators Charles Grassley and Elizabeth Warren are among the lawmakers calling for an investigation. UHS had previously denied it held people against their will solely for profit. You can listen to the entire interview on our website, wjctnews.org. You can also tune in to First Coast Connect each weekday morning at 9 a.m. on 89.9 FM or streaming on our WJCT app. For this series of stories, WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride looks at the state of mental health for our young people here in Jacksonville. First off, Duval County High School students are reporting a higher-than-average rate of suicide attempts and feelings of hopelessness. Superintendent Nikolai Vitti addressed the situation earlier this week at a board meeting. He said the district should provide more comprehensive mental health services in more schools.
Vitti says last year, the district received more than 1,000 phone calls to its crisis hotline, and half were suicidal or homicidal threats. In last year's anonymous survey, nearly a third of high schoolers said they felt sad or hopeless almost every day for two or more weeks in a row. Almost one in five said they'd considered suicide or made a plan to do it. That's about the same rate as Duval middle schoolers. Another one in five said they'd actually attempted it. That's more than two times the national average for attempts among high school respondents. Vitti says Duval is training teachers to recognize and help students who are experiencing mental health challenges, referring them for services, and offering mentoring. He says the district should encourage talking about mental health to reduce stigma, as well as expand services to more schools and advocate for increased funding for prevention and treatment. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
Lindsay Kilbride now looks into new research from the University of North Florida that links poor memory with pessimism. And what might surprise you is that the research indicates that young people may in fact be more pessimistic than older people.
UNF professor Tracy Alloway says past research has shown working memory,
so ability to process and remember information,
is linked to clinical depression. She says, take a depressed person after a job interview.
So you would actually recruit your working memory and fixate just on those negative aspects of your interview rather than thinking of what you did well or even what you could do better for the future.
On the other hand, she says, someone with a better memory is more able to focus on the positives. Alloway tested more than 2,000 healthy people ages 16 to 79, asking them to rate their optimism and pessimism levels, and also measured their working memory, which can be tested by asking them to demonstrate.
How many numbers can you remember in backwards order?
And she found a few things. One, age was a predictor. Teens and young adults had the highest levels of pessimism, and nearly 85% of those who reported feelings of depression were also pessimistic, ranking themselves high in scenarios like this.
If something bad is going to happen to me, it will. But we also found that their working memory was predicting whether or not they were optimistic or pessimistic.
People with lower working memory scores were more negative. But she says there are things people can do to improve their memory, like eating more blueberries or dark chocolate.
Some of them are quite tasty options.
They can also be more intentional on focusing on positive aspects of events, she says. Alloway's study was published in the Journal of Applied Cognitive Psychology. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
Thank you. And now, a campaign is underway in Florida to educate parents about a childhood vaccine that could prevent cancers associated with the sexually transmitted human papillomavirus, or HPV, in adulthood. The vaccine is recommended for girls and boys beginning at the age of 11. This is according to Allison Moriarty Daly with the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners.
Acquisition of the HPV virus happens pretty quickly after the initiation of sexual activity. So that's why it's important to kind of vaccinate early to prevent the virus before anyone's exposed to it.
HPV is linked to cervical cancer as well as cancers of the mouth, throat, and genitals. The original recommendation of 3 doses of the HPV virus was amended in October to just 2 doses for children younger than the age of 15. Older teens and young adults still require 3 doses. As many as 79 million Americans are thought to be infected with the virus. Coming up.
Dear son, happy Festivus? What is Festivus?
It's nothing.
When George was growing up, his father hated all the commercial and religious aspects of Christmas, so he made up his own holiday.
The state capitol will feature a very real display for this fake holiday. But first, WJCT's Ryan Bank takes a look at how local health officials are preparing for the upcoming change in administration.
Parkesh Patel is chief operating officer for insurance company GuideWell Health. He says lawmakers should be cautious because 2 million Floridians who gained insurance through the Affordable Care Act hang in the balance.
If we make some of the changes that are not well thought of, we can go back to where we were, where we had lots of uninsured people, and also it was so expensive for the people who needed health care the most. And what you end up doing is getting a lot of uncompensated care, which everybody pays for it.
President-elect Donald Trump has promised to repeal and replace Obamacare, which could lead to more uninsured people seeking care in emergency rooms. And in Jacksonville, they'll probably end up at safety net hospital UF Health. UF Health Jacksonville CEO Russ Armistead told the delegation of mostly Republican lawmakers that now that a Republican is in the White House, he hopes they're not embarrassed to take federal money, especially when it comes to reviving the expiring low-income pool program, a federal and state matching fund to cover health care for the poor.
My hope is with a more favorable Washington administration that maybe more federal funds will come to Florida and they'll somehow find their way into the health care program.
Armistead says without the continuation of the program, his hospital is at risk of closing. It receives around $60 million a year in low-income pool funding. The Obama administration refused to extend the program past this year because it said the state should instead accept federal funds to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
And now, Duval County advocates are celebrating the state legislature's moderate progress this year toward reforming Florida's mental health system. Many of the changes were recommended in a report done by nonprofit researcher Jacksonville Community Council, Inc. The study looks ahead at what still needs to be done as Florida remains second to last in the nation for per-patient mental health funding.
JCCI found serious deficiencies in several mental health care categories, and a task force has been working to implement recommendations. Chair of the task force, Pat Hogan, says the news coming out of Tallahassee has been mostly positive.
Some of them were fully realized, some were partially realized, and a few of them we did not have any success.
The legislature approved a pilot program to divert people with mental illness from jail, though the funding for that program was not passed, as well as standardization of mental health courts and an expansion of nurse prescribing power. Advocates were also instrumental in securing some funding for what's called a central receiving system, where patients can be connected with social services. The county still needs to raise $1.5 million for it to open, though. With a tight state budget expected next year and so much left to do, Hogan is worried progress may stall.
All we can do is continue with our advocacy efforts and make sure that we have a loud, vocal, and recurring presence, speak to legislators that that we know we can count on and hope for the best. But I'm not overly optimistic about this upcoming session.
Hogan says mental health care proponents should focus on the local level to keep changes coming. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
And finally, with Christmas and the start of Hanukkah roughly 1 week away, Florida's capital will once again host a winter display celebrating the fictitious holiday of Festivus. The State Department of Management Services is greenlighting a Festivus pole for the third year. It was originally an activist reaction to the Christian nativity scene erected at the Capitol Rotunda. Self-described professional troublemaker Chaz Stevens says the 5-foot Festivus pole will refer to President-elect Donald Trump.
And it's what we call the Ode to the Orange Hindenburg. It is now a shorter pole in recognizing Mr. Trump's smallest hand.
Stevens says the display will feature an upside-down American flag, an international sign of distress, and it'll be topped with a Make America Great Again baseball cap. A similar display in Broward County was recently vandalized. This is according to Stevens. And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. This Tuesday night at 11 on Indie Endeavor, host Ryan Bank is sitting down with Jacksonville's very own DJ Mandarino. He'll talk about Jacksonville's place in the electric music renaissance, and he's also prepared an exclusive mix for WJCT. It's all part of our station's after-hours programming. Here's a sample of what you'll hear. Please enjoy.
Music was a little loud.
Are you afraid of it?
No, I just don't like techno.
Thank you.
And that concludes Redux. From WJCT in Jacksonville, I'm Vince Kong. Thank you for listening.